Welcome to the CRE Exchange Podcast, where we deep dive into the global trends and challenges of CRE professionals across all sectors of the commercial real estate industry. We engage with experts in the space to bring you innovative insights into industry practices, opportunities, and challenges to better inform your decisions. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate.
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of CRE Exchange. I'm Cole Perry, your host and Associate Director of Research here at Altus Group, a leading provider of asset and fund intelligence. I'm joined by Omar El-Tarai, our U.S. Director of Research. Together, we'll share the latest news and trends in the U.S. commercial real estate market. Omar, it's great to be with you. What's on our agenda today?
So we have an episode full of macro data, and we'll kick that off with the FOMC minutes, talk about some GDP numbers, then dive into personal income and outlay data, as well as inflation, consumer confidence, before hopping over to manufacturing data and some construction data. And then we'll also call out and dive a little bit deeper into the FDIC's quarterly banking profile data that they released recently. And then we'll conclude with updates and announcements as per usual.
Excellent. How about we jump right in? You want to share with us what you were looking at last week?
Sure. So minutes from the Fed's May 6th to 7th meeting were released on May 28th, revealing some further color on how members of the U.S. Central Bank were thinking through the recent turmoil caused by ongoing trade negotiations. Specifically, the minutes showed that the Fed was monitoring the market reaction to the proposed tariffs as the increased market volatility, especially within the bond market, where credit spreads and overall yields spiked after the first episode of the trade turmoil, raised potential financial stability concerns. That's something they're going to be monitoring going forward. And another key element that came out of the minutes was that the expected inflationary impact from tariffs, coupled with the anticipated labor market cooling, could potentially force the Fed to decide between prioritizing one of their policy objectives over the other. So if you think about it, they're potentially going to be put at this crossroads of holding rates steady to counter the inflationary impact of negotiations and any sort of tariffs that come out of it, or cut rates to ultimately support growth and a labor market, which is really expected to deteriorate. So while the minutes showed that really the broad scope of the Fed meeting and the discussion within the meeting, they did note that credit quality concerns in the CRE market are broadening beyond the office sector. To bring it to some context and to bring it a little bit more close to present, given that this meeting was at the start of May, if you look at the cut expectations within the market, and Cole, I think you're going to dive into this even more, but the next Fed rate decision is coming June 18th. And the markets have really all but eliminated expectations for any interest rate cut until at least later in the summer. There's some indication around the July meeting, but then most certainty is around September. And although as more hard data is coming out, capturing the initial impact of tariffs and the trade tumult, I suspect that the expectations across the markets, as well as across the Fed, could potentially swing again, especially if the Fed is put into that position of having to pick of keeping rates up to fight inflation or potential cut or insurance cut to support economic growth in the labor market. But over the last week, we've already started to see some of the economic expectations and projections starting to sour. Another key piece of data that came out last week was the GDP numbers that were released on May 29th by the Bureau of Economic Analysis. This is the second estimate of Q1's GDP growth rate. So GDP decreased at an annual rate of 0.2% in the first quarter of 2025. Real GDP was revised up by 0.1 percentage points from the advanced estimate. So that was their first estimate. And this is reflecting an upward revision to their investment component. So if you think of GDP as being consumption, investment, government spending, and the net exports, that investment component was revised up, but that was offset by a downward revision to consumer spending, which only rose by 1.2%. And that's down from the advanced estimate of 1.8%, suggesting really that U.S. consumers are showing more signs of caution and a bit more of a pullback than previously thought. Also in the release was the preliminary Q1 corporate profits estimate. Corporate profits are very valuable in terms of understanding where we are in the overall kind of credit cycle, but also it can be a leading indicator of many other factors, including hiring. And so profits, and this is including the inventory valuation and capital consumption adjustments for the first quarter, were estimated to be $3.8 trillion on an annual rate. This is declining $118 billion from the Q4 estimate, which was at an annualized level of about $4 trillion. What's, I think, pretty notable is that this is the largest quarterly contraction since the fourth quarter of 2020. Also on the topic of GDP and bringing a little bit closer to present is the OECD, or the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, which is a club of 38 rich countries. They cut their 2025 and 2026 growth forecasts for the world and the U.S., citing negative impacts from trade policy driven by the U.S. administration and the resulting decline that they've seen across both business and consumer confidence. Looking at some of the high-level takeaways from that report, which was over 280 pages, global GDP growth for 2025 was projected to be 2.9% on an annual basis. This is down about 20 basis points or 0.2% from the prior read, which they had come out with in March. U.S. GDP growth for 2025 was projected to be 1.6%, and this is down a much more substantial 0.6 percentage points from the March projection. The report also did call out a few CRE-specific mentions. While a lot of the, I think, property and CRE-related content actually was in the China segment of the report, the OECD's report did note that CRE in the U.S. is potentially at risk, particularly if a change in investor appetite triggers a widespread sell-off across investment markets. And I think this was a kind of a broad statement, but they were ultimately putting CRE on the radar of potential risks and markets that could be affected. This OECD report is part of the current round of forecast adjustments that we're seeing across the U.S., across individual investment banks and investor groups. But I would just tack on that the Philly Fed's survey of professional forecasters, which came out earlier in May on the 16th, they also were noting slower GDP growth. They put it at 1.5% through the second quarter, and this is down from 2.1% that they had for the second quarter in the last quarter's survey. But overall, I would say that the theme is that you're starting to see the economists really factor in slower growth going forward. And I know we've just been focusing heavily on GDP, but one area that is seeing these similar kind of downward revisions is in the labor market. And they're pretty steep declines. And there seems to be a consensus building around not only slower economic growth triggered by the tariffs, but then also a contraction within the labor market. But a big driver of whether it's GDP and then ultimately a driver of demand for labor is seen in the consumer space. And Cole, I know you were looking at the recent personal income and outlays data. What did you see there?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things I think that are important to call out here. And you already mentioned some of the downward revisions to the Q1 consumer spending data within the GDP report, but the personal income and outlays report did come out for April on May 30th. So now, including a kind of post-Liberation Day window, this came out on May 30th. I think there's two components that are important here. So there's the kind of the headline consumer spending numbers, and then also the Fed's preferred gauge of inflation is the personal consumption expenditures price index. So focusing on that first one, consumer spending actually rose in April, but just 0.2%. That was after a 0.7% gain in March. Now, the household savings rate actually did increase, which I thought was interesting. Personal income jumped 0.8%, but that lifted that savings rate to 4.9%. So if you were to dig into the data, and we don't have to go through every number, but just line by line on discretionary goods, there was a big pullback. Cars, clothing, appliances saw big drops on the month, but essentials, housing, healthcare, utilities did see jumps. The other piece that I wanted to call out is that PCE price index. So again, from the personal income and outlays report, that showed that headline prices rose 0.1% on the month and 2.1% on the year. Now, the core PCE measure, which is the Fed's preferred measure of inflation, rose on the month as well, 0.1%, but that was up just 2.5% year on year, down from 2.7% in March. And that was actually the smallest annual increase in more than 4 years. So softer inflation in April, and we've already been talking about this a little. Fed is definitely widely expected to hold rates steady at its June meeting. If you look at the CME FedWatch tool, it was a near certainty that was the case. So even though core PCE is at its lowest annual rate in 4 years, and that did offer the market a bit of optimism, there is a lot of potential inflationary impact from the proposed tariffs that definitely have not materialized in this data yet. If we draw this out towards the later half of the year, if companies begin passing those costs through to consumers, it really could complicate this inflation outlook, prolong higher rates, maybe even a cut beyond the September, like you were saying before. And I think that's just going to continue to add uncertainty to CRE pricing and investment strategy. Now, what's really interesting about this is that there was previously a pretty big gap between consumer sentiment and broadly consumer actions, but one figure actually saw a big rebound. So I thought this was super interesting. I was taking a look at the Conference Board's Consumer Confidence Index for May. This came out on May 27th. And after 5 straight months of declines, the index actually spiked 12.3 points from April to 98. And that was far outpacing consensus estimates. And interestingly, the present situation index component of the overall confidence index rose 4.8 points to 135.9, while the expectations index rose 17.4 points to 72.8. So I think this is a relatively welcome signal. I mean, if you draw the parallel to CRE, your kind of retail and hospitality oriented property sectors that definitely rely on discretionary spending are going to take this as a positive. But so much of this optimism in this particular release, I think, were driven by the hopes that the US was going to retreat from major tariffs on China. I think those have been since pushed off yet again. But the talks more or less remain unresolved. So I think this might be a temporary snapback. It should be interesting to see what the June data says. Again, full economic impact of the tariffs has yet to be processed and mood is improving. But again, one extra data point here. I think folks are still going to be cautious until there's a lot more clarity on policy direction. So still perhaps some divergence between what consumers are saying they're feeling and what they're actually doing. But a lot of this April, May data is still very early in these tariff talks. I was taking a look at one other piece of data. This is one we've not previously covered too heavily on the program, but that was the Institute for Supply Management's Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index. So the ISM Manufacturing PMI. This is widely watched as a leading indicator. It's a survey of factory executives. They sit closest to orders, production plans, supply chain pressures. And I think it's important to understand how this particular index works before we dig too deep into the numbers, but it's a sequential readout. So it compares the current month to the previous month, and a reading above 50 signals expansion in manufacturing, while anything above 42.3 actually points to broader growth in the U.S. economy, because manufacturing could still decline or contract while the broader economy is expanding, because manufacturing only makes up 10, 11, 12% of the overall economy. Services effectively drives the rest. And so May's PMI slipped to 48.5. This is the third consecutive month of contraction. And the only component, there are five that go into this, that actually remained above 50 was supplier deliveries. So if you read into this a little more heavily, demand for manufactured goods is cooling and lead times for inputs staying pretty long. The really interesting thing about this is that it does lead government data, and there's not just the five components that they're looking into, but a lot of other pieces are surveyed as well. So we talked a bit about inflation and the PCE price index. There is a prices index component to this PMI report. And again, same metric, 50 or above is expansion and 50 below is contraction. The prices index was very elevated at 69.4. And some of the commentary in the report said that cost pressures for metals, electrical components, and packaging were pretty severe. Previously, they had reported that inflation was actually greatest for freight costs. So this is now extended into inputs, you know, at least direct inputs to durable goods. So I think there's a direct takeaway for CRE. There's probably an indirect takeaway as well. This really sticky input inflation is definitely going to have an impact on durable goods and also on construction. There was a really big run up to bring in raw materials prior to tariffs. And while that is subsiding, these price pressures are still going to remain sticky. Now, the indirect takeaway is that despite the contraction in manufacturing, and that's been happening in the PMI figure for years now, the figure hasn't dipped below that 42.3, which would signal that the economy is contracting. So the economy is cooling, but it is not contracting if we take the PMI data on its surface based on years of correlations here. But factories are trimming output, new orders are slipping, and the GDP continues to be propped up by the services side of the economy. We're definitely seeing a little weakness in manufacturing. And I know I've been talking for a bit, but I did look at one piece of data. This is from the census, came out on June 2nd. This is April data on the value of construction put in place survey. And so this tracks annualized spent dollars for construction, and it tracks private, public, residential, non-residential, and does individual sector breakouts. And so that the headline figure was that construction spending came in at $2.1 trillion in April, but that was down 0.4% from March and down 0.5% from the year prior, or April 2024. A lot of this decline is actually coming from a drop in the private residential spending. So a lot of this decline is coming from a drop in private residential construction. That came in at $892 billion in April, but it was down 0.7% from March and down 0.9% on the year. Definitely a lot of the reason that we saw declines on the month. But if you zoom into our world or CRE, and the report calls this private non-residential construction, breaks it out into a bunch of different categories. We saw the smallest growth in private non-residential construction spending since July of 2021. It was just 1%. Mind you, this is nominal data. Again, reflects dollars spent at the time of construction, and then it's annualized. So some of that growth period that we saw in the last few years could be purely due to a rise in construction costs. But that also means at a growth rate of just 1% now, spending on non-residential construction is likely declining in real terms. So if you look at the individual type, individual property sectors that they track, private spending on healthcare down 1.3%, lodging down 2.5%, on commercial down 5.4%, on manufacturing actually flat on the year. So now that CHIPS Act spending that we've covered a few times on the show, that boom is fully retreating. Interestingly, office saw a 3.9% increase on the year. I mean, if you lump together all other spending, telecom, amusements, transport, power, a lot of the smaller categories, those were actually up 5.2%. So a lot of interesting stuff there. It's zooming into to CRE construction activity. But Omar, I've been talking for a while, sticking on our CRE theme. What were you looking at in that FDIC quarterly banking profile?
Yeah, so the FDIC released their quarterly banking profile on May 28th. And you know, you can think about this as a aggregated view of the U.S. banking system. So it covers pretty much all banks in the U.S. that are covered by FDIC's deposit insurance program, and is pretty much any depository taking bank in the U.S. And it provides some pretty great insights into the health of U.S. banking. And it's a lot of data, and it is really focused on the banking industry heavily. So not all of that is necessarily relevant to commercial real estate. But I wanted to go through at least a few of the highlights that are more relevant to CRE. And so first, looking at overall balance sheets and loan growth. So CRE lending across U.S. banks in the first quarter of 2025 grew by 0.4% versus the fourth quarter of 2024. That's well below the long-run historical average of 1.4% quarter-over-quarter growth. The Q1 data was also up 0.7% on a year-on-year basis, so Q1 2025 versus Q1 2024. And again, that's well below the long-run average year-on-year growth of 5.6%. And for context, these kind of less than impressive quarterly and year-on-year gains in terms of CRE total loan growth across all banks was up about 3% on a year-on-year basis in Q1. So that's inclusive of single-family resi, that's inclusive of personal loans and C&I loans. But overall, with less than 1% increase in CRE, you can pretty much see that the banks have not been piling in to CRE in a very meaningful way. Even though there are some signs that some are getting back into it, it is still a bit sluggish recovery. But multifamily of the CRE loans saw the most significant positive growth. So it was up 3% on a year-on-year basis, while the sharpest contraction in bank lending for CRE was CRE construction and development lending, which fell about 4.1% versus the first quarter of 2024. Potentially driving the shrinkage of bank lending for CRE construction and development loans, or another sign of contraction, you can see the balance of unused CRE loans, CRE lines of credit, and unsecured CRE lines of credit continued to decline for the ninth consecutive quarter in Q1 2025. However, one area that might be pretty interesting to watch, and I believe it was a new line item that they broke out in this Q1 release of the data, is the growth in bank lending to non-depository financial institutions. I think of this as lending to funds or lending to other non-bank vehicles, which grew by $96 billion from Q4 2024. That's up a whopping 43% versus Q1 2024. So not all of this lending is CRE, but likely a good chunk of it is being allocated to private markets and a big portion of that to CRE. Then one other area that I would look at in this release is loan performance. So banks reported quarterly decreases in overall past due and non-accrual loans. So these are pretty much any loans that are delinquent and in that non-accrual status. And CRE non-accrual and past due rates are the highest since the fourth quarter of 2014, with multifamily CRE really having grown the most in the last year. The elevated past due and non-accrual rates of non-owner occupied property loans also remained elevated through the first quarter and increased by 10 basis points or 0.1% percentage points since the prior quarter or the end of 2024. And the report that accompanied the quarterly banking profile noted that this is being driven predominantly by the big bank portfolios, but it ultimately is increasing across all the banks in aggregate. Still sticking on those largest banks or those with greater than $250 billion in assets, The past due and non-accrual rate for non-owner occupied properties was at 4.65%. This is down about 10 basis points from the last quarter, but is still above the pre-pandemic average of about half a percentage point. And then a final thing in terms of loan performance and asset quality, the industry's quarterly net charge-off rate was 0.67% in the first quarter. This was decreased very slightly, about 3 basis points from the prior quarter, and is about 1 basis point higher than a year before in the first quarter of 2024. I know that was a lot of banking, and there's even more in the report specifically covering banking as a whole, but I would just underline that banks are really critical in determining the timing and the speed of recovery in commercial real estate markets. If you're not familiar with the quarterly banking profile, I would encourage you to check it out on the FDIC's site, get familiar with it, but also feel free to reach out if you have any questions about breaking it down.
I think we got a lot that's recently released and upcoming, so I'm happy to run through some of the things for you guys to look out for. But if you listen to last week's episode, you'll know that the 2025 Q1 Investment and Transactions Quarterly Report is out. So hopefully you tuned into that episode, but if not, we'll include a link to the report in the show notes. Again, that covers US CRE sale transaction volume, pricing, other various trends. For an abbreviated version of some of the stuff from that report, we'll actually have a summary article live on the Altus website soon, and some other follow-ups, including an article about the past quarter century of transaction trends. And then next week, we're going to have an episode on REIT earnings. It's been a while since we've done one of those, so we'll recap a handful of the calls that we've listened to for 2025 Q1's earnings. And just broadly, an announcement is that we have a lot of good guests coming up in the third quarter. So stick around. We're excited to host them. I did want to call out a few data releases and some things we'll probably talk about on future podcasts. But on Friday, June 6th, we'll have the employment report for May, along with consumer credit data for April. On Monday, June 9th, the wholesale inventories data for April. On June 10th, the NFIB Small Business Optimism Index for May. And then we'll have consumer price index data for May on June 11th. And the producer price index for May on June 12th. So a lot to look out for. But Omar, I think that's all the time we've got today. Before we sign off, just want to encourage our listeners, if you like the show, we'd love if you could rate it. Give us 5 stars on Apple and Spotify. Leave us comments there as well. We do read them. Or feel free to just send us an email at altusresearch@altusgroup.com. We'd love to know what topics you've covered on the program. But in the meantime, Omar, it's been a pleasure. Look forward to speaking with you on another episode of CRE Exchange. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the CRE Exchange podcast, powered by Altus Group. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate. At Altus, we bring together capabilities across technology, analytics, valuations, and development advisory services. We are guided by bold thinking, integrity, and inclusivity, partnering with CRE professionals to maximize opportunities with exceptional service experience. Find out more at altusgroup.com.